Welcome back to Maritime Morning. It is Wednesday, November 23rd, 2011. Welcome to our New Brunswick audience here as well. Nice to have you along. I hope that you're faring okay through this storm that is moving through. As we heard, we're getting a lot of it, and it is getting kind of messy out there. We've been talking about some of the traffic problems on the roads here in HRM. Buses jackknifing, or at least one instance of that, and cars slipping and sliding. We've had about 30 different crashes around here. So clearly, some folks are not entirely prepared for this with their snow tires and whatnot. So please be careful out there. You know, we've got a good audience, but we want to keep all of it. It's essentially been the theory behind how Steve Murphy has conducted things as well.
He's telling people to drive carefully.
Built his audience one person at a time and telling them to drive carefully so he can keep them.
I actually built my audience one relative at a time and then moved on beyond that.
Steve Murphy has marked 25 years behind the anchor desk at CTV. Before that, it was ATV. Steve was the host of Live at 5 for 7 years, wandering around with papers in his hand before actually being given a chair to sit down and anchor the CTV news or the ATV news in 1993. And he joins us this morning for a little reflection on all of those years gone by. It is something.
Thanks for the invite, yeah.
25 years is, it goes by in a flash, though, doesn't it?
It does, and I said to some of my colleagues yesterday, and this will include you, Jordy, that when you are celebrating a milestone for no reason other than longevity, you have not only the right, but the obligation to point out the longevity of others. And okay, so secret, I mean, I've known you for 30 years, and we've never worked together. Well, we worked together, but we didn't work together 30 years ago, but we knew each other.
Almost 35, Steve.
Okay.
Because as a young man, when you began at CFBC, when you were 16 years of age, broadcasting there was a time, this was a couple of years, I guess, down the road from your career, but you were still in high school, and I was working at CHSJ.
Were you about 17, 18?
I was actually 20 at the time. I think I'm a couple of years older than you. And I know we mentioned this one time before, but you came in when I was doing my program at CHSJ and put your feet up, and we commiserated for a while. And that's
a few years ago.
Yeah, a lot of water under the bridge.
But you're right about it going by in a flash. And I find, and I don't know, you know, how others who celebrate anniversaries for whatever reason are feeling, but I find it a little harder to keep track of the chronology when I look back on things now. I mean, I still have a pretty good memory for what happened, but I'm losing the clear sense of when some of it happened in relation to other things. So last night, Leo Carter and Star Dobson and Bruce Frisco put together sort of a reflective look at the 25 years from Live at 5 through to the 6 o'clock news. And I was very surprised at when some of those things actually happened. Not that they happened. I do remember them happening. But it's just I don't remember the context quite the way that it was.
So. Do you remember when you first started doing television, though? Because you did make that leap. I mean, that you actually had done very well as doing a talk show, radio talk show.
Did the hotline show on CJCH for years and loved every minute of it, but didn't appreciate it enough.
What do you mean?
Well, I think that I was very young. I was in my mid-20s doing a phone-in show, and I didn't fully appreciate the freedom that this format provides. And, you know, you've got a long history in radio. I think this is your first foray into talk. The freedom that flows through that microphone and through the phone lines, it's unrivaled in all media. It really is. You can say pretty much anything you want. You can get into any topic you want. And the format depends on the strong expression of opinions. I now look back on the talk show days, and I've heard some of the tapes, and I think, man, I was a wimp. I didn't really stake out a firm position on enough. Mind you, perhaps 25-year-old people shouldn't be staking out too many firm positions on very much.
With that, there comes a certain obligation, obviously, and a responsibility. And I was talking with some students, actually, at Mount St. Vincent the other day. And certainly think, what I find anyway is when I give these little talks to people, sometimes I think I learn more than certainly they did.
I feel that way.
Because you get the opportunity to express some of the, I think, some of the fundamental things that you feel. There is I think, an obligation that we have in the positions that we are in order to make decisions that color what it is that we do and our opinions. And I wonder, I wanted to get here with you because you're in a different position now. You're in a position where opinion is not necessarily the fundamental, or at least the front and center component of what you do.
We facilitate others expressing opinions in news stories that are supposed to be balanced and fair. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, and I've spoken to public relations professionals about this too, part of the reality of maturing is that by the time you reach almost any responsible stage in life, you do have firm opinions about things. You have made up your mind about some things, rightly or wrongly. So to pretend that in journalism, for example, we can be completely objective, I think that's a bit of a facade. I think our obligation is to be fair, and our obligation is to be balanced, and our obligation is to be accurate, and our obligation is to be thorough. And all of those things are essential qualities of journalism. But the notion of objectivity is a tough one, insofar as most people just aren't objective about some things. And here's the prime example. Mm-hmm. If you live in Canada, if you are listening to 95.7, 88.9, and 91.9, you believe as a right in the freedom of expression. Well, that biases you in favor of democracy. Now, you could argue, well, yeah, but all the smart people or all of the reasoned states believe in democracy. But look around the world, Jordy. There are people rioting again in Tahrir Square today because they don't have it. So, we have a bias and we practice it every day. Sitting behind that microphone and throwing the switch is an expression of your bias for free speech and democracy. A bias I share, by the way.
Do you think that the biases that you hold, the beliefs that you have, because I went back actually to the idea of values mm-hmm. when I was talking with these students. You have a core set of values.
We all do.
Do you think that it colors what you do? And do you think it has an effect on...
Well, colors in that sense is a bit of a pejorative. Does it affect it? Does it shape it? Well, how could it not? I mean, when you walk into the radio station here in the morning, when I walk into the television station, when they walk into the Herald building over on Dutch Village Road, those people, I guess it's Joe Howe, isn't it? They don't park their opinions at the front door. Now, they do, we hope, and I believe that most journalism is fair, balanced, tries to be. But we can't park all of our lifetime's worth of opinions at the door every day. We just have to make sure that they don't crowd out fairness, balance, thoroughness, and accuracy.
It has to be measured against whatever level of professionalism you bring to the job, right?
That's right. But again, in your defense, you're not paid to sit here and be objective. I hear you in here in the mornings saying all kinds of things that are nowhere close to objective and nowhere close to accurate, though. But you know what I'm saying? This medium of talk radio is not about journalism. And somebody said to me, well, Jordy Morgan is a journalist. Why would you have a journalist on your show? Which you were on a couple weeks ago. We were talking about the Occupy movement.
I'm not a journalist. I've never purported to be one.
And that's exactly what I said. In fairness, I don't think Jordy Morgan portrays himself as a journalist. He's a talk show host. He's an opinion broker. He's an opinion shaper. Tim Bousquet, he's a journalist, but he's an opinion journalist as well. He's a different breed of journalism, a journalist. So, don't accuse somebody of not being what they are not trying to be.
No, I think that it's fine. And if you want to put it in the context of journalism, that's fine. As long as people are transparent about whatever position they're taking or where it's coming from, there is no way with my political background that people could possibly say that I am going to be entirely nonpartisan or entirely balanced.
Fair enough.
I try to be fair.
Fair enough. But, to assume that because you were once in the employ of the Canadian Alliance, for example, that you therefore ipso facto agree with every mutterance and utterance of the Prime Minister of Canada, I'm not sure that the one follows the other. I assume there are a lot of similarities in your point of view, but I don't think that being of the same tradition necessarily makes you such a carbon copy of the Prime Minister that you're not capable of independent thought. In fact, I hear some independent thought on here occasionally.
Now you see, here's a case where somebody's tendencies are rising to the fore. This is where the interviewee becomes the interviewer. This was about you, not about me.
Okay. Old habits die hard, Jordy.
I know. You're going to turn the tables around.
I have a few questions for you later. But
that's right. We're going to talk
about you. By the way,
you.
Isn't being interviewed tough when you interview people for a living?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's more interesting then again, there's, sometimes, going to a therapist is the most interesting time in the world because you get to talk about your most interesting subject.
We played the clip last night. I asked Oprah Winfrey many years ago about whether she enjoyed being interviewed, and she said it's therapy, but a lot cheaper. There's some truth to that.
It's absolutely. Yeah.
Not that Oprah has to worry about the money anymore. I think she's okay.
Steve Murphy, 25 years out. We're going to talk maybe about some of his favorite moments. And if you had a question, let's entertain that as well at 405-6000 at Metro or 1-877-801-8255. This is Maritime Morning. We're back in a moment.
Happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it. Happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill.
Welcome back to Maritime Morning.
That's from the Flintstones, isn't it?
That's very good.
Yeah.
You are someone who spent your lunch hours well involved in black and white television.
Absolutely.
Or maybe color, I suppose.
The Flintstones were way ahead of their time, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent many a lunch hour involved with Betty or Wilma.
Tough call. Two fine prehistoric women.
Steve Murphy, who's celebrating his 25th anniversary on television. You went back and did Live at 5, started doing Live at 5 in 1993.
No, that was 86.
No, I'm sorry. You did the news in 93, right. Pardon me, and you were doing 86.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my math is off there. Live at 5, 7 years.
Mm.
How much influence did Dave Wright have on you as a broadcaster, and especially in doing that show? Because he did set a new standard for that kind of programming.
Almost impossible for me to quantify the influence that Dave had on me personally and on what we do generally. And I don't mean just in the Maritimes, on CTV, ATV. Dave Wright was way ahead of his time in a lot of areas. And I'll tell you, I remember when there was a move by CNN a few years ago. Get rid of the anchor desks. Have them all stand up and walk around with papers. And there's Wolf Blitzer walking around with a fistful of papers. I'm thinking, this is really interesting, but Dave Wright was doing this in 1982. And he invented these ideas. So Dave was way ahead of his time. And what some people don't realize about Dave, who passed away earlier this year, is that Dave Wright did not really consider himself to be first and foremost a journalist. Dave Wright was first and foremost a programmer. And Dave, I think, understood television as a medium. He understood how to make it, how to sell it. And then, of course, he understood the audience and what the audience was keenly interested in. And we were at the dawn of at that time it was the 50-channel universe. Remember when cable came along and suddenly, you know, you didn't have one channel or two. You had 22 and then 42. And Dave understood that in order to be recognized and in order to stand out from all the others, he had to do different things. And that's what he did. So he had a huge impact on the medium of television and on me personally.
Well, what was the impact on you? Did it shape the way that you perceived what you were doing? Do you see yourself as a newsman in the morally safer kind of newsman way, or do you see yourself as somebody who's responsible for programming?
If I'm going to be completely blunt, I think I am a broadcaster who practices journalism. And some would say, well, isn't that a broadcast journalist? It is, but I am a broadcaster. I mean, I have spent my entire life in broadcasting and most of it in news. But to me, you know, there are certain things that journalism demands that television doesn't necessarily allow. And depth is one of them. We're sometimes accused of not being very deep on television. How deep can you be in 90 seconds or 100 seconds or 120 seconds? Look, sometimes we take much longer to tell stories or do interviews, but television, as a rule, is not the best medium for depth. We can do depth on W5. We can do depth in documentary treatments. But the daily news is not principally about depth. And I maybe should be ashamed to say that, but I think that that's a reality of the medium.
This sounds like probably the most cliche question that I could possibly conjure up. But what do you actually attribute the success of that newscast? Down the street on Bell Road, they've been trying to figure out how to get anywhere close to attracting the audience that ATV has attracted. Now, you know, I could sit here and look at you, Steve, and say, it's obviously you because you're handsome and you know, a wonderfully competent broadcaster. I don't believe that. I think that there is something about what it is that you do that it's not ingratiating. People find an emotional attachment to it in some way.
Yeah.
And I'm to be quite honest with you, and if you compare the two newscasts side by side, and frankly, you know, a lot of the time you deal with the same stories and whatnot, and you know, there's only so much going on in one day in Nova Scotia and the Maritimes. Mm-hmm. So, what is it that you think has actually made that newscast so much more successful than what your competitors are doing?
I might not be the best person to answer that question, but
you've thought about it.
Well, I have. I'll offer you this. To me, news is really about a common point of view. And I think what we try to do every day is find stories about people that somehow reflect a very wide point of view. And I think we've always done that. I think we got that from the Dave Wright tradition of, you know, try to understand your audience and then try to find the things that we all share in common.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Frank Maggot and Associates, which was the huge television consulting firm, was the first to sort of recommend that television stations do a lot of weather, because weather is the one thing we all have in common.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's any secret that we do a lot of weather on television, but why do we do it? It's because it is what we all have in common. Same reason why in this talk news format, there's a lot of weather. This is something that is a shared experience every day. So when there is a blizzard raging through the region as there is today, this is what we all have in common. We all have the same traffic concerns and kids to get after school and will school be open or closed and so on. So that is a very shared experience, and therefore that is good subject matter for daily television. I do know that obviously we make mistakes, and some days maybe we do a story that maybe doesn't serve the audience as well as it could. The audience, by the way, calls and tells us, and you know, you've got to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought that if you use the audience as a sounding board, and if you're mindful of the constant currents of commentary that come from your audience, that it helps you make decisions. That, by the way, is not to tear down any of my competition. I will tell you, Jordy, sitting here right now, I think that we in the region are served by good television news organizations, and I have enormous respect for CBC and for Global.
I wasn't trying to be critical of the work that they do over there, because I have a lot of friends over there, and I think they do very good work as well. But the proof of the pudding's in the eating, you know, when you look at the ratings.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth addressing. Tim is on the line. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, I got a question for Steve.
Morning,
sure.
Tim, sure.
I thought it was awesome when you were interviewing, I think, Huskelson from Nova Scotia Power, and you're asking him about his bonus or whatnot.
I think that was Rob Bennett,
Okay.
Who is the president of NSP. Yeah.
I would like to know, who was an interview that you pushed the hardest for a question? What was the question, if it was answered? And how did they react to you after the show afterwards?
Very, very good question from somebody who obviously watches interviews. Mm-hmm. I think the interview that gave me the most trouble was one I did with John Turner back when he was prime minister campaigning against Brian Mulroney in 1984. And I don't remember exactly what the question was, but it was an ethical issue. And I think I did push him pretty hard on it. And the response from the audience...
Did you say you had a choice, sir?
No, well, good line. Good line. That was another gentleman who used that line. To great effect, by the way. I don't remember exactly what the subject was, but I do know that a lot of the viewers contacted me and the television station to say you went too far, you pushed too hard, you weren't fair. And, of course, I was a fairly young guy back then. By the way, it can't have been 83 because I wasn't doing it in 83, so it would have been in 88.
Yeah.
Let me say that I learned a lesson from that, and that is that... and this is a lesson that's in progress. There is a difference between being persistent and being tough and being mean. And when I looked at those tapes afterward, I thought, you know what? I think you were mean. And I think if I find myself being mean, then I've gone too far. Toughness does not demand or allow meanness. And there's a difference.
It's when I think sometimes that comes out if you get emotionally involved in the interview, and you have to approach an interview from a certain dispassionate perspective in order to, I think, ensure that you ask the best questions. But sometimes, like anybody else, if you think somebody's stonewalling you or being duplicitous, then you want to go after them.
You do.
There's a natural tendency.
I think
there.
We're obliged to do it, but I think the audience has gotten a lot more savvy over the years.
Mm.
And I sometimes say to young journalists or journalism students or to friends of mine who dabble in politics or public affairs that a lot of people seem to think when they sit down with Jordy Morgan or with me or some other interviewer that if they can get through the interview without giving up any information, that they have won something. Let me tell you, the people listening to this program, the people who watch us at night, they know when the question is not being answered. And there are only one of a couple of reasons why people don't answer questions. One, they don't know the answer. Or two, they know you won't like it. And the people are very smart, listeners and viewers, very, very savvy. Yeah. Catching on to that.
Steve Murphy, 25 years in the chair. And honestly, Steve, I hope there's another 25 in you.
Well, I don't know. I guess that's a compliment to Jordy.
Well, yeah. I'm hoping I've got at least that because I know I'm not ready to retire yet, and I hope you aren't either.
I would like to say that what I do, what you do every day is dependent on the people who watch and listen, and I'm very grateful to them for the hospitality.
Well, grateful for you coming in. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Steve. It's always a pleasure. We're going to take a break. Richard Zarowski is going to join us in a couple of minutes with the Science Files, and by the way, you can watch Steve Murphy at 6 o'clock tonight on CTV. Back in a moment here at Maritime Morning.